This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall. Ian Franklin, Kentucky. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Chris Basile is going to join the program here a little bit later on in this hour to break down everything in the World Cup, Jensen. Of course, we know Sunday's final will be between Argentina and Spain for all the marbles. We've got Alex Smalley, that is currently the solo leader, if you can believe this, from good old United States of America at 5-under par right now with a couple holes to play. So we'll keep you updated there. But Jensen, we know it. What goes up must come down. It's time to play a rousing edition of Stock Up and Stock Down.
Buy low, sell high, as long as you have a reason why. Whose reputation is soaring and who's on the verge of collapse? It's Stock Up, Stock Down.
Jensen Lewis has won the coin toss today, elected to receive your first Stock Up. Is whom?
Oh, it's nice and easy. World Cup knockout stage, man. It has delivered and then some. What an incredible finish yesterday. Obviously, the heavyweight fight between France and Spain with a little bit of a shock. I know the sportsbook's very happy about it, that France ended up bowing out. But the comeback victories, if you just joined us, Mike Palm illustrating that, one of the great bets you can make at Circa Sportsbook throughout the tournament. It has been profitable exponentially. But it's just the drama. All the late goals, Dave, the stoppage time results that changed not only millions of dollars, but how teams would end up advancing through. Don't know if you could have cooked it up any better. It has been so great. The countdown to Spain, Portugal, Uruguay in 2030. I don't know how they top it. And I know we still got one match to go to see who lifts the trophy on Sunday afternoon.
Great minds think alike. It's just going to be simple for me, too, for this first Stock Up. It is just soccer being in the United States. As one of the host countries, as the host country now for the semifinals and certainly the final coming up on Sunday, I think we have proven that for a nation that we don't think football first, right, or soccer, as we call it here, that's not normally our cup of tea. It's not going to be our number one thing that we're most excited about as a fan base. Well, maybe we flipped that narrative on its head, because I do think with the European invasion, not just the Euros either, the whole world coming here, getting a taste of our country and showing that we do, that when you come, we're going to put it in our best venues that we have in the United States, and you're going to get a real, true fan experience here. Jensen, I think it's been, without the team success, I think it's been a really good showing for the red, white, and blue here, that we can be a soccer country even when it's not about the United States.
It's going to be fun to watch. And again, we'll see what happens in 4 years' time. We'll see what happens in the second half of the Major League regular season, because, boy, do we have a fight to the finish in not only the playoff chase as far as teams trying to find their way in, but we got some divisional races that all of a sudden have really shortened up. First and foremost, Tampa Bay and New York going to duke it out there at the top of the American League East. Don't look now. Boston Red Sox, hottest team headed into the end of the first half. They've won 9 in a row. The Chicago White Sox, the Guardians, the Twins, all within 3 games of each other. White Sox and Guards begin play on Friday, tied atop the American League Central. It's a 3-team race in the wild American League West. Texas leads Seattle by a game and a half, and they have a 3-game advantage over their in-state rival Houston. How about the Atlanta Braves clinging to life atop the National League East? They're 2 up on the Phillies, who start the second half tonight. The Marlins, hard charging, are only 4 back. And then the Chicago Cubs. Yeah, they've been a roller coaster team, but man, 5 games back of the Brewers. Don't know if the Brewers are out of harm's way. And I think Chicago will be very active, as will many other teams, at the trade deadline before August 3rd.
Jets, so this one might perplex you a little bit when I say that the stock is up right now for the Ryder Cup. And you go, wait a minute, we're not playing the Ryder Cup until next September in 2027 over there at Adair Manor in Limerick, Ireland. Well, why would this be pressing now? Why is the popularity of the Ryder Cup continuing to go up, up, up? Because let's be honest, okay? When we watch the last major of the year this week over the next 4 days, we're going to be talking about Euros. We're going to be talking about Americans. That's what we're going to be talking about. You just asked the president of the RNA yesterday about unruly fans and what's going to happen to the unruly fans in Europe, yeah, they actually do exist, people. That's a real thing. And some of our Americans have been getting heckled. And they have gotten – when Brian Harman won the British Open a couple years ago, he was getting heckled as an American. And, Jensen, I'm not here to say we have to stop the heckling. I think they're looking at this all wrong. Embrace the heckling. This is good. And that's what you're going to get at the Ryder Cup when we go overseas to Ireland next year. I expect it. If you're the United States, don't say, oh, you know, we're worried about the yelling at us and it's swinging and my backswing. No. That's what you should expect if you're wearing the red, white, and blue and we go over there. Be mentally tougher than the fans that can't play at the elite level that you play at, all right? So let's be a little bit tougher here, golf, because the Ryder Cup, it's built for this. I know the Euros are still complaining about what happened to Bethpage Black last year, right? Boy, oh boy, were they upset about that. Deal with it, boys. Okay, we're going to deal with it. We're going to go to Ireland next year, and it's going to be one of the greatest sporting events that we see every 2 years. The Ryder Cup, the stock is up. Let the fans be fans. And let's all enjoy it, and let's put the big boy pants on here and go win a golf tournament.
All right, I just talked about it with Mike Palm, but it bears repeating. Baseball trying to grow the game and trying to continue a groundswell that I can tell you I experienced firsthand through this men's college baseball postseason. The stock has never been higher on amateur baseball. Well, let's lean into that, MLB. You find different ways to continue to really trip over yourselves when it feels like it's so easy to be able to illuminate some of the great young talent that is coming here in the next several years. I'll say it again. What I hope they do for scheduling next year and beyond, if you want to keep the draft after the College World Series, I think that's a great move. Number two, you can end the first half on a Saturday and not one player is going to be upset with you about not playing on a Sunday. Now, you can hold that for a rain date if you want, but I would shy away from that, and I'd rather tell all 30 teams you can't schedule any rainout makeups or any PPDs that day because that is the day we're going to celebrate the next wave. You put the futures game on in the afternoon, standalone spot there at the All-Star venue. You put the Major League Draft on that night in primetime on a Sunday. It is one of those easy fixes that MLB can make. And if you do that, watch the amount of fans that parabolically come into wanting to know more about not only the amateur side of the game, but you eventually get as those people buy into the great storylines of these collegiate athletes, these high school draftees. It's an easy fix. MLB, do the right thing.
My first stock up was soccer in the United States. My first stock down is United States soccer. And there is a massive difference, okay? The fans have been better than the team. And we've got to be real about the result of this United States soccer team this year because I got swept up in it too. And it's a really good showing. And it's not, again, losing to Belgium. And I still haven't had a waffle since. It's the manner in which you lost. I know England has a lot to say today about the manner in which they lost Argentina. We were non-competitive against Belgium. So, Jensen, before we start to say that we have arrived on the international soccer stage, we have not. So we have to stop kidding ourselves, United States, to even put ourselves in the conversation with the big boys. We are not on their level. We should be on their level. We aspire to be on their level, but we are not there yet, not by a long shot. And I think now, if we can kind of go back there without rose-colored glasses and look at what this was, it was not as impressive as we thought we made it out to be at the initial stage. So USA Soccer, be as good as your fans have been to host this event. And as the host country, you should have been better. Stock is down on United States Soccer.
Dave, I played in a lot of hostile environments in my professional career. And there were fan bases that probably had a little too much of the adult beverage in them and probably said a few things that they regret. I think we've got a few of our athletes that today would like a mulligan. And I'm looking at you, golfers, Jordan Spieth, Matt Fitzpatrick, not to name names. But we got to get past this whole blaming betting as a reason why your game suffers or why you can't handle what the environment is. I got news for you. If you head to Roman times, you know, way back in the day when those people were fighting for their lives in the Colosseum, you mean to tell me that there wasn't, you know, some wagering happening on those contests? You mean to tell me that Tiger Woods took the course and there wasn't heckling left, right, and center that had nothing to do with live betting or betting in general? Wake up, grow up, and go back to what you were taught to do. Keep the outside noise out, focus on what you can control, and quit reading social media every single day. Mm. This is not the reason. Betting is not the reason that you have faltered or you have issues. Go back and look in the mirror and make sure that you take accountability first.
My last talk down, I saw this stat yesterday. I couldn't believe it. This is the first time since 1989 that Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson have not been competing in one of the four majors. We've just gone up and through an entire major season without Phil or Tiger, and nobody batted an eye. This is supposed to be the glory days. We're supposed to be honoring these guys like we did Jack and Arnie when they were finishing up their time on the PGA Tour and as active participants in these things. And they've brought it upon themselves. This is not a pity party for Tiger or Phil. It's more sad, Jensen, that those two legends of the sport, between them over 20 major championships, we didn't even bat an eye. We didn't think about Tiger and Phil as we're talking about the four majors this year. And that is sad, and I wish it could be corrected, but I don't know that it can. Going to talk some more World Cup with Chris Vasili next right here on VSiN by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge, but what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
And then there were two. We're down to the final on Sunday for the World Cup. It's going to be Argentina, and it's going to be Spain. But we don't know who's going to win. Chris Vasili, kind enough to join us once again, betting analyst at Covers. Give him a follow, as I do, on X at MC_Silly3. And joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line to try to get an answer to that question. I guess it's a very simple question here, Chris, when we're down to the nitty-gritty in these two. But the manner in which these two squads got there, Argentina, just a heart-pumping fashion to come back down 1-0 late to England and getting those two tallies. Spain, not as much of a challenge as we thought it would be against France. I get why Spain is the favorite here in the final because of those two results. But, boy, do you really want to fade Messi this late as we get to the World Cup final on a Sunday?
Yeah, that'd be kind of like playing with fire, I think. You know, this Argentina side has kind of, you know, some would say they've gotten, you know, caught, you know, lightning in a bottle with the way they've kind of progressed through the knockout rounds. But, you know, with 10 leading the way, you know, creating plenty of chances, you know, finding that killer instinct at the very end to, you know, get this team over the hump. I think it's, you know, like I said, playing with fire to fade this side. I do think they're going to be in tough against Spain, who, you know, obviously have looked, you know, like the best team in the tournament for, you know, the duration of the tournament thus far. You know, it should be a good game. I do expect goals from both sides, a little foreshadowing there, both teams to score. But yeah, it's going to be tough for Argentina to defend, but I do like their chances.
I would agree. And I think that the operative part here is if Spain were to get the early goal in which they did against France, it almost feels like an auto bet on Argentina because of what they've done late in matches as well as in the stoppage time. I'm with you on the both teams to score. Would you also be interested in maybe a total over 2.5 in the 90 minutes? Or do you think that we have an opportunity with the way that Spain's defense has been? Does this get to extra time, or do we feel like we can find a regulation result to lift the trophy?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jensen. I do think this game kind of screams 1-1. So you could either play the draw, you could play an under, you could play both teams to score. Yes, I think there's kind of multiple paths for, you know, each team to find the back of the net. You know, obviously Spain's defensive record speaks for itself. They, you know, play in possession of the ball, you know, almost 70% of the time, or 60% of the time, I should say, this tournament. You know, Argentina, you know, they seem inevitable to find the back of the net. I do think this is going to be more of a tactical approach than, you know, we saw in Argentina versus England, which, you know, didn't exactly go in the English's favor. Argentina has an identity. Spain have an identity. They're going to try to play true to who they are. So yeah, extra time wouldn't shock me. I do lean both teams to score. Yes, it's kind of come up from, you know, opening minus 106, now minus 115 at some spots. And under 2.5 is definitely a good look, or the draw. So there's a couple angles you could play this game. My favorite would be both teams to score. Yes.
Chris, it seems like I know Jensen and I do it a lot, and I do it often when I'm going to look at coaching in the NFL, breaking down a Sunday and breaking down a script and the way that we're going to see a game play out. How important is it for the head coaches here? Because you go back to France and Mbappe is criticizing his head coach after they lose. We see England, and you see what's happening today on that side, going to blame the head coach here. How important is coaching here between Argentina and Spain? Is that overlooked a little bit?
It's important to a degree. I still think at the end of the day, the players need to perform the actual, you know, put the game plan onto the pitch and perform, you know, as they've been instructed. You know, obviously Thomas Tuchel, you know, getting a lot of slack in the media for his, you know, lack of conviction when, you know, when they go up 1-0, you know, defending for the 30 minutes at the end there didn't work out for him. But for Spain and Argentina, obviously, like, these two coaches, they're experienced. They've, you know, been around the block. They know how to get the most out of their you know, starting 11. So I wouldn't say coaching is a big factor, you know, more so than in any other game in the semifinals or the quarterfinals. They got to get the tactics right, but it's ultimately up to the players to perform. And, you know, it's one thing for, you know, the players to call out the coaches in the media and stuff like that, like Mbappe and Bellingham did, you know, when they beat Norway. But, you know, at the end of the day, the coaches put the players in the best position possible where they think they can perform and, you know, have success. And it's up to the players to deliver a performance worthy of that. And, you know, we saw in the semifinals, France against Spain. France didn't exactly, you know, put that game plan to work, and they got beat for it.
Chris, it is always about some of the supporting cast, but when your stars are stars, you obviously know why Argentina and Spain have made it to this point. I think we still have yet to get a signature performance from Lamine Yamal on the Spanish side. Do we finally get that on Sunday? He has been a shot creation machine. I wanted to get your thoughts on maybe an anytime assist. It's a nice juicy number at DraftKings, plus 310. It feels like if he's not been creating high danger chances, he has been in and around it to be able to have that touch, to be able to create the scoring chance. Is that a valuable angle you think we can attack on Sunday?
Absolutely. That's a great angle, Jensen. When you look at Lamine Yamal, like, he came into this tournament, obviously battling fitness. You know, he's kind of been spared in the group stage, you know, played limited time. He's not kind of looked at his best yet, but, you know, like you said, there's a moment for every great player to kind of leave their mark. You know, what better than a mark to leave in the finals against, you know, a player that, you know, Lionel Messi, that he kind of grew up, you know, watching and playing for Barcelona and whatnot. But tactically, I think Lamine Yamal, the way teams have troubled Spain, we saw Cabo Verde do it. We saw Egypt is out wide, you know, generating chances from out wide, cutting in, finding runners that are, you know, coming into the box late. I do think this sets up nicely for Lamine Yamal to kind of, you know, take guys on one-on-one from the right-hand side, you know, cut in, find a late runner, find Mikel Oyarzabal in the box there. So yeah, that's a juicy price and, you know, one that I definitely would consider playing for sure.
Chris, for the Golden Boot, and I'm looking right now in prediction markets, and I'm seeing that Lionel Messi is about a 62% chance to win that award. Kylian Mbappe here at 38%. That tells me we don't have any other percentages here for Kane or Bellingham here. It feels like a two-horse race that we've kind of gotten rid of some of the middlemen, if you will, and we're down to the brass tacks here with Messi against Mbappe. Of course, we know that the tiebreaker would be for assists that Messi has at this current juncture. In that, you know, quote-unquote meaningless game for France and England, one, is Mbappe going to play? And two, if he does, would he be motivated to win this award?
You would think so. He'd become one of the first players to win the Golden Boot for the, you know, a second consecutive, or not consecutive, but second time in his career. This is kind of interesting because, you know, you mentioned that, you know, Messi's a big favorite over at the prediction markets. One of the books that I use regularly, you know, Messi started -125 yesterday. I looked this morning. He's now +100 with Kylian Mbappe -125. So there's a lot of discrepancy in the market for this specific award. You kind of got to take it with, you know, a two-prong approach. Is Mbappe going to play? How much is he going to play? And do France have enough motivation to get him this award? Obviously, they still have to play. They still have to score the goals. You know, England's kind of devastated. You know, no, neither team wants to be in this third place game, which I think is a farce, but that's a story for another day. But, you know, it's all about, I would wait to see the lineups before you make a move on this Golden Boot market. We obviously know Messi's going to play the 90 minutes. You know, if not longer than that, he'll have chances to, you know, pad his lead. But Mbappe, would you put it past him scoring two or three goals in a, you know, what's a basically a friendly with no team, or with both teams not really trying too hard? You know, it's tough to say, but I would definitely wait and see what kind of Deschamps has in store for that game and how he kind of sets up his starting 11 for that one.
Okay, Chris, this will certainly be the last match where you can really be into the motivation angle for the World Cup final, and that leads us to some player props. Outside of our usual suspects in Messi and Yamal, shots on target props, maybe to score or assist, anything that would jump off the page for you for a value play on either side?
Yeah, so looking at this third place game, you know, a couple of stats that jumped off the page right when we kind of doing the research. Over 2.5 goals are hitting 16 of the 20 games so far, so we're hitting at 80%. Both teams to score, yes, 70%, 14 and 6 to the yes. So when I look at this game, obviously the goal market is priced kind of out of the reach. You know, over 2.5 is -225. Both teams to score -225. If you're looking at prop markets for that specific game, I would go the shots on target route. I would take, you know, as many big name players as possible to go over their shots on target. You'll probably get 1.5 for some of the bigger name players like, you know, Elise Dembele, you know, the supporting cast there. I do also like the over shot on targets combined for that game, which will probably be about 8.5 -120. That's usually where these markets open up. So yeah, expect plenty of shots in that France England game. I don't see it being, you know, a highly contested match. Both teams are probably going to trade chances back and forth. Shots on target, you know, the way to go if you're looking to go a different route other than laying -225 for an over 2.5 goals.
All right, only 30 seconds to go here, Chris, but let's get down to the nitty gritty. Who is winning the World Cup on Sunday? And if you want to throw one in, who's going to be third place? France is over $2 betting favorite to beat England.
Well, my outright ticket on Argentina says Argentina. It's going to be very tough, but with Lionel Messi leading the way, you know, why not trust them to get the job done? Third place, I think France have too much pride to kind of go out with a whimper the way they did. England's devastated. I don't think they're going to be up for this game by any stretch. So final prediction, Argentina defends their title and France gets third place.
Chris, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate your insight as always, my man. Give him a follow on X at @MC_silly. We are back. Best bets in the Daily Diamond coming up right here. It's VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books on this Thursday morning. Alex Smalley right now is on the 18th green, Jensen. He's at 5 under par, so barring some sort of catastrophe we don't see, that is going to be the clubhouse lead at 5 under par. So if you have not made those first-round leader bets, that's the number to shoot for before some of those big guns get out there. Currently, Alex Smalley, the man to beat right now at 5 under par. We get to some viewer mail that we've had issued our way. We'll answer some of those questions a little bit later and get to our best bets. But right now, Jensen, getting ready for that second half in Major League Baseball. Well, let's kick it off with a little Daily Diamond on a Thursday. some of these bets that we made, and I know some of those bets I made, I've already written off as loss leaders, if you will. Some of those still very excited about. Jensen, let's go through some of those bets that you made before the year that still right now either have a good shot to cash or we need a little bit of work to get done.
Yeah, with the World Cup results here in the semifinal, we still have two very attractive multi or cross-sport parlays alive. And we will have a culmination of what baseball future will live on once we get through the World Cup final on Sunday. As it stands, let me start there with our crossbar parlays because it's really going to factor in to where we handicap the second half, Dave. Right now, the Mariners 56-1 to win the World Series. That, of course, the second leg. Should Argentina win the cup on Sunday? On the other side of that, I know one you really liked before, the Phillies at 105-1 should Spain win the World Cup. One that I had to go back into the portfolio as I was recounting what was alive or what was dead. Very much alive all of a sudden here. The Motor City parlay of the Detroit Tigers, 61-1 to win the World Series. That is active due to the second leg of that parlay being Michigan to win the college basketball national championship on the men's side. We have documented in earnest the Yankees 287-1 to win the World Series by virtue of the Knicks winning the NBA title. So American League wise, Dave, we could be set up really well because I also made two preseason wagers on the Orioles at 30-1. Not sure if that one's going to be alive, but we'll see. The Rangers, though, at 30-1, very much going to be in there, as is the Pirates on the National League side at 50-1. Chip in a chair, and we could monetize that one as early as the wild card round. Now, to win the American League pennant, I made the Mariners pick at 5-1 before the season. Still like that one, and that would be a nice little correlation should Argentina win. Could have two chances to monetize there. It would basically be on house money when we get to the ALCS, should that come to pass. The National League, Dave, I've added throughout the year, Cubs at 6-1 early on, Padres at 20-1, and then the Pirates at 25-1. And I'll start there with you because the National League side of it, I feel, is obviously in correlation with we're going to go through the Dodgers at some point, and where is the time? Division Series, National League Championship Series, depending on those teams, that might be advantageous to come back on LA should they be alive deep into October.
Very quickly, before I get to some of those that I have active, I wanted to ask you the same question I asked Greg Peterson. Please like, subscribe to the VSiN by the Books podcast here, where we get those pods. Take a listen to that conversation. I asked him specifically about the Yankees, and I've got a couple tickets on them as well. And that really nice one you have now with the Knicks to win the NBA title here, which that part's already done. What, 287-1? That's a monster ticket. At 12 games over 500 for the Yanks, I do feel like the perception is negative around this team. I know the three games back of Tampa Bay, but with the injuries, with Gerrit Cole coming back, didn't even start the year with the team with the injury, has not been great. No Aaron Judge for the majority of it. Can we flip that narrative and say, boy, to be 54-42 at the break without your two best players, arguably, maybe they're not in as bad a position as people are making them out to be.
I'm probably going to hold off until we get the clarity or maybe even lack thereof of the imaging that supposedly is taking place, if not already, for the ribcage injury that Judge has. So that to me will give a little bit more of a timeline or at least roughly when we could expect him back. Dave, if I'm a betting man and you know, sometimes I am, I would say that it's going to be after the trade deadline in a significant portion of when we'll see Aaron Judge. I don't know even if middle August is optimistic. I would think you got to be conservative and say that we need to make sure it's eradicated. So I would look more towards the end of August before Aaron Judge is finally back in a regular season game.
Ironically, they were three games back at the All-Star break last year to Toronto and came back and tied them. Got very close to the last day of the regular season. They're fighting for that divisional lead. They're three games back of Tampa Bay right now as they get ready to begin their second half on Friday. I'll give you a couple of the plays that I have. Look, I'm dead in the water on the Mets over 86.5. I'm not going to list that. There's just no chance of that getting home. Hopefully it's going to be offset a little bit here by the Fightin' Fish, something we brought up with Mike Palm earlier in the program too. I just like the way they swing it. They don't strike out a lot. They're going to put the ball in play. They will play small ball. And they just put pressure on defenses. And I think their pitching's good enough. I wonder what they're going to do come All-Star break. Traditionally, you know, you can go back decades here when the Marlins are in it. They will make some moves here to kind of bolster this roster. I like where I'm sitting, obviously, with the 72.5 over win total to make the postseason at plus 750. Got a really good price point in pocket there. Pirates above 500 right now, feel pretty good about that over 76.5 wins. I think we're going to be able to get there barring some disaster, and Paul Skenes has not even been the best version by far of a Paul Skenes, so maybe a little rest here this week will get him looking more like the Paul Skenes we're accustomed to. It's the Athletics. Jensen, I don't think they've won a game since I went on vacation. Like, what happened there? So, like, 75.5 wins is the total. I'm not saying that I'm drawn dead, but for a play I really liked for the majority of the first half of the year, what happened there? Is this just who they are? Are they still that nomadic team? And until they get a city that they can get entrenched to, is this what I can expect from the A's in the second half? That was so disappointing over the last 2 weeks.
Well, they're headed to Las Vegas in 2028, so we know the destination. By the way, the stadium construction looks really cool. I've been seeing some of the time lapses there for what they've had. So I think they're going to be fine. They do need help pitching-wise. Lineup-wise, yeah. You know, you've got as good a foundation moving forward with what Nick Kurtz has put together and what they'll have, and hopefully getting Brent Rooker healthy for next year as well. A couple of other award markets that I have still active, Dave, and maybe some miscellaneous wagers. More to your Marlins point, I did jump in on them live at 35-1 to win the National League East and 4-1 to make the postseason. So I think you and I align there with the hashtag fighting fish. I did, because a viewer was so great about just teeing it up, the momentum the Tigers have in a weak AL Central parlayed with the Marlins, both those to win their respective divisions. A little pizza money at 111-1. The Rockies and Dodgers, the only two win totals I made before the year, also have them in our VSiN MLB Futures draft. The Rockies over 54.5. They are projected to be in the low 60s right now, so they could fly over that one. And then the Dodgers under 102.5 wins at even money. They're right now projected right around 99 or 100, so that could be a little sweat in the end, but I would think that they're going to rest the regulars at some point the last 2 weeks of the season, so I feel comfortable about that. The one that we got a scare on over the All-Star break, Junior Caminero, the AL MVP, number 20-1. It looks like he's going to be okay. Said he plans to play in both legs of the doubleheader tomorrow. Day-night double dip between the Rays and the Red Sox at Fenway Park. Munetaka Murakami, second shortest shot to win AL Rookie of the Year. Got him before the year at plus 850. I think that the TJ Rumfield, this was courtesy of Will Hill when he came on and gave that out. I tailed him on the National League Rookie of the Year at 50-1. We'll see what happens on the National League side as JJ Weatherholt has just been amazing. And then, hey, don't know about the Cy Young in the American League yet. I mean, you got a big second half here for Cam Schlittler, Dylan Cease, and Jacob DeGrom still hanging around there. If Texas makes a run, you got to think he's part of it. Davis Martin, similarly, with the Chicago White Sox. If they stay atop the American League Central, he will be at the forefront of it. DeGrom at 13-1, Martin at 60-1, both respectively, to win the American League Cy Young Award.
Can't confirm nor deny that the ghost of George Steinbrenner or Billy Martin threw that pitch at Caminero in the All-Star game for the Yankee faithful out there. Very quickly, we do have breaking news here. We have a new leader and a bunch of new leaders here at the British Open. I mentioned Alex Smalley, barring a disaster on 18, would be the guy to beat at 500. We just had said disaster. He double bogeyed the last, Jensen Lewis. So Smalley goes from 5-under to 3-under, which means right now it's the minus fours that we're chasing for first round. That is significant in the first round leader bet market. So, you know, your tickets that you added, I believe, on Rory McIlroy and certainly on Colin Morikawa getting out there a little bit later. The job just got a little bit easier here because we've gone from 5-3 for Smalley. That means Daniel Brown and Sungjae Im are now the clubhouse leaders at 400 par. Jensen, we're alive, baby. We got some hope for those guys that haven't teed off yet. You don't have to get to 6 to get the outright. 5 right now would be good enough to get that done. We'll talk about those bets that we have at the Open Championship and beyond when you come back with us, our best bets straight ahead on VSiN by the Books.
by the books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the books, and we've got a great special for you right now. If you're not a VSiN Pro subscriber, no better time than the present. VSiN.com/subscribe. Early bird special for our football, as we like to say here. So that VSiN football special, it's just $175. It's going to give you full coverage through the Super Bowl in February. So you're going to get those daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, and coverage of every major sport all season long. Remember, the earlier you sign up, the more value you will get out of this. So head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Jensen, we get some great viewer mails. We appreciate everybody that's been doing that. Buy the books at VSiN.com. I'd like to read the first one if I could, because I didn't realize that we have a big population of people watching and listening to us north of the border. We love our Canadian friends. This comes from Kevin, and he says, hello, Dave and Jensen. You guys are awesome. Big audience here in Canada. Keep up the fabulous show. Love Jensen's breakdowns of Major League Baseball as a former player. Unique, in-depth insights that are profitable. Take care, gents. Thank you, Kevin. And I always say that, Jensen, like I get to pick your brain every day from a guy who's been there, done that. It's got to make you feel pretty good that even in Canada, they're watching us, listening to us, and they can't wait for your Major League Baseball breakdowns.
Well, it should endear us even more, Dave, because the other part of his email is even better about how he and his fellow brethren tune us in each and every day. So he said, thanks for a great show. Quick story. We recently retired and eight of us play 9 holes of golf 3 to 4 times a week in the morning. Well done. We need to get on that schedule. We meet at 7 a.m. in the clubhouse, have coffee and watch your show. Then we tee off. Our wives thought it took 4.5 to 5 hours to play 9 holes until one day mine showed up as I had forgot my phone. Now the girls go and play 9 in the afternoon and stay for a drink or two, and we complain about their 4 to 5 hours to play 9 holes of golf. Take care. Have a great summer. Great stuff. That's a great story. We appreciate you having us tuned in the clubhouse there before you guys tee it up today and rest of the week. On a serious note, hope everyone in Canada is okay with all the wildfires and everything. Yes. I know that it has reached Chicago. Just seeing some of the pictures, Toronto kind of with the orange haze, it has reached us. Dave, I looked out the window this morning. We're getting it here off the Great Lakes in Northeast Ohio. So on a very serious note, do hope that everyone is okay. Stay safe out there. And we hope that those wildfires get taken down here quickly. So just again, buy the books at VSiN.com. Email us your first name, city and state where you watch or listen to us from. It's been great getting the feedback. And we've had some great questions, too, you know, with the parlays and how, you know, people like to allocate bankroll and all that. So this is why we do it. We're happy to do it for all of you and give you some great tips. By the way, great tip, Dave, that I want to give out again. Jordan Spieth is 3 over through 13th. That's tied for 92nd. It must have been all the unruly fans with live bets on Jordan Spieth that made him perform so poorly. So I just don't, you hate to see it. But again, Jordan Spieth is 3 over through 13.
You know, I hate to say this, and we got some messages on social media. We appreciate everybody reaches out on Twitter as well. And I just, it's over for Jordy. I know we ran the sound earlier this week on the show about, you know, he could do things better than when he was world number one. I'd love to see it, Jordan, but man, your head, I don't know where it is. If you're talking about gambling and all these other things, like you're great, man. The sport's better when you're better and we're rooting for you, but it is kind of comical after those comments to see the way you're performing so far today at 3 over par. And Kevin, I mean, you got busted. You watch our show, then you play 9. You never tell the wives, right? You just say, oh, it's just taking a little bit longer. We appreciate you guys watching us before you tee off every day and then go out there and play 9 holes. What a great routine that is. Jensen, to that end, and we talked about that rabbit. You and I talk about it every week in the PGA Tour. We never get this in-depth on a Thursday because, you know, obviously being overseas, we don't get this far along from the morning wave into the afternoon wave for us here in the stateside. But now that we saw Alex Smalley Double bogey the last hole to fall back to three and a par. That means the leaders are at four. You added, I believe, Rory McIlroy and Colin Morikawa early in the show. Boy, you have to really like that, knowing that the leaders have kind of come back a little bit. Not to say it's going to be easy to get to four or five under, dare we say, but it's much easier now than getting to five or six.
Yeah, Colin teeing off as we speak, or is probably already teed off. 9:42 is his tee time. Rory McIlroy will be with Matt Fitzpatrick and Xander Schauffele and the 10:15 a.m. Eastern wave. So we will definitely have a watchful eye through the rest of this morning and afternoon. As we sit here, too, I know you have got a big bet on Patrick Reed as the top American, upwards of 25-1. He birdied his first hole to go one under to get his day started. Scottie Scheffler, Bryson DeChambeau, one off the lead. They in the same group together. They are three under through 16. And again, it is still just the two rabbits right now. Daniel Brown, Sung J.M. at four under. Very excited to see Tyrrell Hatton off to a great start. I told you earlier in the week, love his Lynx experience. Mm-hmm. He had a great soundbite for people that haven't seen it. Was interviewed in this practice round and said, I'm hoping for a five on one hole. And he goes, you'll play better. He goes, no, I'll probably be watching from my couch on Sunday. Good to see Tyrrell Hatton off and rolling. He's two under through 16.
Yeah. By the way, that really excited me when you mentioned, because I did not know that Patrick Reed had birdied one. Like, if there's any single women out there and you want to get my attention, just figure out a golfer that I've bet on and say that said golfer birdied one, and you'll have my full attention. That is for sure. So good to see that Patrick Reed is off on the good foot. And by the way, we know that Kelly Bidwin, Dustin Swedelson, they're in next. Can't wait to get Kelly's thoughts here. Certainly the Long Shots crew, as they've been breaking this thing down. And, you know, we're going to talk to Stephen Hennessy tomorrow on the program as well. We like to do this, Jensen, for the majors to kind of recoup after day one. We'll get Stephen's thoughts from Golf Digest as to other ways to bet this before you get to the weekend here. So we'll have those conversations with Stephen as well tomorrow. We mentioned the second half of Major League Baseball. There is a standalone game here with the Mets and the Phillies today. Have you dipped your toe in this singular game, or kind of waiting to see what it's going to look like come Friday for the real series to begin elsewhere in Major League Baseball?
Yeah, I'll wait later on to see what lineups both managers put out there, because remember, this is still a day earlier than the traditional four-day break, and you might see some managers still give a regular or two a day off just to kind of get them that little extra rest. And with the Phillies having multiple position players, namely, you know, Schwarber and obviously Brandon Marsh starting, of course, Bryce Harper in there too, I would think, and again, this is why I'm going to wait, I would think it's normal lineups, because most of those Philly guys stayed home knowing that the All-Star game was there. But I will be anxious to see what both managers do for starting lineup later tonight. I would lean towards the Phillies, short favorite. Aaron Nola, even though he's on the mound against Christian Scott, just like the momentum that Philly has had through the end of the break. And then also, I mentioned the issues with the air quality here today. You know, Fenway Park going to have a day-night doubleheader tomorrow. Dave, that wildfire smoke is supposed to make its way into New York, the tri-state area, into the Northeast. And I wonder, you know, what that would do outdoors if they have to delay that day-night doubleheader, you know, just trying to alleviate as much time outside. But that first pitch is still scheduled for 1:35 on Friday. Again, we'll tackle that tomorrow and kind of see where everything is after 24 hours. But really impactful series. Rays and Red Sox. Red Sox have won 9 in a row. Hottest team headed into the break. Tampa in first place, only 3 games ahead of the Yanks. And then Pittsburgh and Cleveland. I'll be headed to the Guardians game on Saturday afternoon. Consequential series for both teams. Pittsburgh trying to run down a playoff spot. Cleveland is tied for first place in the American League Central with the Chicago White Sox.
Very quickly, we're going to talk much more about it. I didn't think I'd be missing the World Cup, but yeah, it's kind of melancholy that tomorrow will be the last opportunity that you and I get to break down the final two matches, one for third place, and of course with Argentina and Spain in the final. We've got positions already. Will be a spot where you just enjoy the game knowing you're kind of good either way, or do you think you might end up getting involved in the big finale on Sunday?
I'll probably get involved, and I'll see kind of where it is. I kind of like the draw. I kind of like the draw there with the way Spain has been so good. And let's get to extra time. Draw it all the way out. Let's have the World Cup end on PKs. I would love to see it. But Yeah, I might be on the under. Under 2.5 might be calling my name here before we get to Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, us stay away, even though we've got vested positions already. No, I mean, what's the fun in that? We got to have a little bit of action coming up between Spain and Argentina. Of course, England right now over, we see France as a $2 betting favorite right now over England for third place. Jensen, great stuff. We'll do it again tomorrow. Can't wait to talk more Open Championship as that is continuing right now. And we'll do so tomorrow in our show as well. But again, if you've been watching VSiN and you want more of it, VSiN.com, VSiN Watch app. We got a numbers game. Dustin Sweetelson, Kelly Bidlin, they're coming up next. It is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.